Yeah.
Bob can give you a report on his meeting with Parkinson. Some recommendations.
Mr. President, I met with Parkinson, the president of Anaconda Copper, and Weed, the president of his sales corporation, for about an hour this morning. I had Cy Vance with me, an extremely interesting meeting. And it just convinced me of what I thought before, that we're bathed in the woods dealing with these metals and this whole problem of controlling price in this market. For example, they say, and I think they're probably right based on what they said, that the U.S. government has been selling what they call the Mansfield copper. This is the stockpile copper release that is a reflection of Mansfield's legislation. We've been selling, the U.S. government's been selling this copper at 39.5 to 40 cents, or the equivalent of that, taking account of the quality of the copper and the reprocessing cost and so on. And the Chilean government had, and the Chilean government has said to itself, particularly the opposition parties facing Frey have said, if the U.S. government sells at 39.5 cents, why the hell should the Chilean government sell at 36? There's been a lot of stuff of that kind going on. Secondly, Frey is under intense pressure from his opposition parties. He has only 30% of the Senate and 60% of the House, and he faces tremendous political opposition, and they say that he's not selling copper at a price that optimizes income to either the copper workers or the Chilean government and the Chilean people, so this is what's pushing him up. They say further that the deal has already been made between Chile and Zambia to raise the copper price from 38 cents to 40 cents, and therefore our objective should be to hold to the 38 cents. I said that's not a satisfactory objective. Our objective is to roll back from 38 cents to 36 cents. Well, we argued about that a little bit, but I said, and they agreed, that the action required to hold to the 38 cent price is consistent with the action to roll back 38 to 36 cents. There's no need to argue, therefore, what our objective is. What we need to do is figure out what actions require. And I think, in the first place, I want to emphasize to you that this is an entirely different situation than the aluminum situation. Here we've got an industry that is just begging for cooperation. They say they've been down here for 2 years trying to get us to do the things that were necessary to allow them to hold to the 36 cent price, and we as government refused to do it. We refused to release from the stockpile over the last 2 years what they wanted us to release. We refused to put the pressure on the Frey government at the time when it might have had some good to hold to the 36 cents. In any case, they say today they'll do anything to help us. Now, what can be done? Two things in particular. First, we must get into a position where we can say publicly and very quickly, say within the next week, that we are going to release substantial quantities from the 700,000-ton stockpile. I think in order to say that, we will have to get the leaders of the House and the Senate who would have to support the legislation required to make those releases to come out publicly and say that they will support that when the administration submits it in January. Then we, the administration, will say, we are planning to submit the legislation in January. The Congress and its leaders has already said it will support it, and therefore we're planning to release in January at the rate of X, whatever it is. And they say that we've got to be careful how we phrase these releases. It isn't so much a question of what the amount is as to the reason we give for doing so. And they believe we should tie it to defense. Now, I told them, well, our defense requirements are only 100,000 tons, and even they agreed perhaps we should release 200,000 from the stockpile. They said, you don't have to tell anybody your defense requirements are 100,000 tons. Just tell them you're releasing for defense, and then release between 100 and 200,000 tons, or at that rate, over a year. In any case, we've got to get this stockpile freed up to use as a pressure on the market. That's number one. Number two, and I think they agree with this, is we must send an emissary, and a very high-level emissary, down to talk to Frey personally and do it very quickly. He must be an astute individual.
I talked to Tom Mann this morning, Mr. President, as you directed, and the two names we came up with were Bob Anderson or Clark Clifford. Clark, I discovered last night when I talked to him, knows quite a bit about copper. He sent a memo that's consistent with what Bob said, raises some other points about copper futures and speculation. Tom said that he is, he, t- Tom Mann is not the guy to go down there because Frey knows he's damned opposed to some of the things Frey's doing with the communists, A, and B, because it would be more difficult for Frey to capitulate to Tom Mann as the emissary than someone else. I would personally recommend Clark Clifford. He doesn't speak Spanish, but Tom said he did not think this was a problem.
Now, they emphasize that Frey faces an almost impossible political problem, which will prevent him from acting either to accept our request to roll back to 36 cents or even to hold to the 38 cents. And they're not at all sure how we can push him into doing so without at the same time collapsing his government. And I don't know enough about the political situation in Chile to have any thoughts on this, but I think we need some astute people to go right down there and work on it. It's very clear to me also that Ralph Duncan, even though I think he's a competent ambassador, doesn't have the power to do this. I asked them about that point, and they say they have high regard for Ralph, but he's been working with them to hold the 36 cents for months. One of them, the president of the company, told me that he went down 9 times in 6 months to try to get Frey to hold the price to 36 cents. He worked with Duncan to that end, and they failed. So there's no use depending on Duncan to do it. And that summarizes our conversation, Mr. President.
All right. Now, what are the other possible steps like minimizing our consumption?
Impossible. Of no value. What we can do is use some of these levers we have, however, and we've got some tremendous ones on the Chilean government. We uncovered a couple of more this morning. The Anaconda Company, for example, has a tremendous expansion program planned for Chile, which does not involve the use of U.S. government guarantees or financing. But we can tell the Chilean government we're not going to allow the Anaconda Company to go through with that financing program. It doesn't matter whether the Anaconda Company wants to or doesn't want to, and it doesn't matter whether they have the money or don't have the money. We, the U.S. government, can prevent them from going through with it, and we'll do so unless the Chilean government rolls back to 36 cents. So we've got a number of levers, Mr. President, but the possible substitution here, or the threat of substitution by the U.S. government, is not one of them.
Another one, Mr. President, it's not really a lever, but it would have some impact on the market, at least according to Clark, is to raise the margin requirement for purchase of Chile, of copper futures. And I noticed in the Times this morning that these futures are just pushing higher and higher as a result of the Rhodesian situation. Headline in the Times financial section.
Now, how much effect will the Rhodesian situation have on the copper picture?
Mr. President, if Rhodesia stops coal shipments to Zambia, or if Rhodesia prohibits the transport of Zambian copper across Rhodesian territory, we must immediately step in, and if necessary, we must airlift coal into Zambia, and we must airlift copper out. Now, I don't think it'll come to that extreme a situation. We just have to keep the Zambian copper flowing. It's about almost 15% of the world's supply. It would have a catastrophic effect on price if it were cut off.
How much does Chile have of the world supply?
Roughly the same. Chile a little more than Zambia. Chile is around 13% and Zambia is 14%.
And where does the rest come from?
Well, the U.S. has 23%, the Soviet Union 14%, Canada 9%, the Congo 6%. And by the way, there's a triangle between the Congo, Zambia, and Chile. And Chile is the leader of it, and Chile negotiates the price with Zambia and the Congo, and because Chile knows so much more, it's so much more sophisticated in maximizing the price, Zambia and the Congo follow. And this is what they've done on both the 38-cent price and the probable 40-cent price. In any case, the Soviet Union, Zambia, and Chile all produce roughly 14-15%. Then the Canada at 9%, Congo at 6%, Peru at 4%,
Do you have any possibility of increased production in the U.S.?
Not soon. Not soon enough to affect this in any way. Except in this sense, Mr. President, there is some kind of inventory, a drawdown that might be possible in the U.S. I just don't know enough about this to say yet. In addition to our U.S. stockpile, which is, in a sense is an increase in U.S. production, and we make that available, there are some inventories in the U.S. of copper that have been sort of frozen for defense purposes, I think, that might be released.
Clark Clifford says that he thinks that's about 450,000 tons, but he's not sure what he gets from industry sources.
But I don't think it's too important, because it's very clear that in the 700,000-ton stockpile, we've got more than enough metal to influence the U.S. and the world market if we use it properly.
How much stockpile do we have to have?
None. Zero.
Why?
Because the stockpile was based on a 3-year war requirement, and if we reduce that to a 2-year requirement, we think we won't need any stockpile at all.
Where will you get it? Just from our own production?
Well, we'd get it from our own production and free world sources, with the possibility that if in extreme cases the free world sources were cut off, we would put mandatory controls into effect on the use of copper in our domestic economy for other than defense purposes, and thereby get by without a stockpile. Now, we're still working on this. When I say zero, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but the net of it is, Mr. President, that we can justify release of ample quantities from the 700,000-ton stockpile to put pressure on the market.
How much do we consume a year?
This is a little difficult, because we consume a lot of different kinds. For defense, we estimate we'll consume about 100,000 tons next year. And they tell me, Weed and Parkinson told me this morning, that they think the consumption in the private economy in the U.S. of comparable kind of copper is about 1.25 million tons. So we consume about 10% of 1.25 million tons for defense.
Well, now, why couldn't you just quit using copper?
Well, it's impossible, Mr. President. Copper has unique uses for electrical conductors and in ammunition and in other purposes that we couldn't possibly substitute other metals for quickly. Now, over a long period of time, such as 2, 3, or 4 years, we can do it, but it requires a lot of redesign of our equipment and redesign of processing, and it's inconceivable that we could shift over any substantial percentage of our spent uses of copper to other metals in the short run. And the metal we would shift to is aluminum.
Yes. Yes, I've had experience in that, and I did that several times. When the copper boys got rough with us on our conductors for our electric lines, we did go to aluminum and did go to ammiductor combination, and it was very much cheaper. And that's why I was wondering why, if we did put a stop order on anything that wasn't absolutely essential or a substitute to be used, why that wouldn't have an effect.
Mr. President, we can try that, but I really think that it'll have practically no
effect. I don't want to try it, I just want to analyze it and see if there's...
I talked to Dr. Foster and Dr. Brown about that yesterday or day before. They both share my feeling, and I feel rather strongly on this based on my own personal experience, because during the Korean emergency, we almost had to shut down at Ford Motor Company because of copper restrictions, and we had one hell of a time, and it took a long time to put substitutes through. And that was a much simpler problem for substitution than aircraft or electronics equipment.
Perhaps we can find out, the way we did with aluminum, how much copper other government agencies use and whether there's any substitutability there. A memo requesting that.
I think that would be indicated. I'd like to look at somebody that's got a little study on it and see if there are any other possibilities, just to not just curiosity, but just searching around and see what other things be considered. Seems to me that we might have some plans we just wouldn't necessarily have to go through with. If you released 200,000 or 300,000 of the 700,000 tons, what effect would that have on the Chilean Zambia price?
Well, immediately nothing. But if it were associated with a discussion with Chile by a U.S. emissary telling them that this was but one of a series of steps that was going to be taken, my judgment, and it's a judgment shared by Parkinson, that it would have considerable pressure on Bray. Now, whether it's enough pressure to roll it back, I don't know. They say it isn't. I think it might be.
Well, what is their solution to it?